All right, folks, we are back on the flagstick.com Tea Talk podcast. Stefan Tiedorf here. He's Scott McLeod. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. You, man?
Good. What a great week. It's been a great week of golf. The weather feels like it's turning. I got a lot of different thoughts on my mind, golf-related, not golf-related. Why don't we start off with everyone's favorite segment? What are you drinking tonight, Scotty? What do you got going on?
Well, it is, that week of the year as far as celebrating our non-Irish heritage.
Nice.
We got St. Patrick's Day, so a little Bushmills with ginger.
Nice. I figured you the Bushmills, and congratulations to your people. Another successful year.
I'm not Irish. But I'll celebrate it.
No
Guinness in the house, so
yeah.
Unfortunately.
No Guinness from me. My wife opened a bottle of wine the other night to cook with, and obviously she, as I'm sure listeners are aware, is very pregnant at this point. Could be any day now. Next podcast could have a new roommate, as I've decided to call him. It was open for 2 days, so I was like, it's going to go bad. Someone's got to drink it. So it's a Tuesday night, and here I am drinking a bottle of wine.
Well, I think you're going to get another bottle anyway.
So, yeah. Actually, my segue is this. I'm going to give a shout out to a brewery in town, and I'm going to ask you a question afterwards. So into a brewery today to pick up a 2-4 beer, McKinnon Brewing Company here in just outside of Bath, Ontario. Sorry. And every time I go to McKinnon Brewery, I know what I'm going to get. I'm going to get a smile. Unfortunately, there's a mask on. Good service. They're going to be happy I walked in. They're going to ask me how I'm doing. They're going to give me the beer on, and it's good. They're happy that you're there. And I left that brewery and I thought to myself, how many times can I count, how many courses can I count on my hand, golf courses, that I know when I go into that golf course, that's the experience I'm going to get.
Mm.
And when I think of the last year of playing golf, I can think of two. I can think of one that is always that way because they're just a family-run facility, and it doesn't matter if you're grabbing a beer or you're grabbing your tea time. You know you're dealing with a family member, and they care about their business. And the other one, we went up and played with the owner, and maybe we got a little bit better service than we usually would. But that doesn't feel what it's like up there to me. It feels like that's the case up at TPC Toronto. And unfortunately for me, it just got me on this annoying. I went from a high to being annoyed to why can't customer service be like this in golf? Yeah. Why can't we be happy to see the people that are paying our bills?
Yeah, you make a valid point. It's something I've seen in the industry for a long, long while. And, it's a continuing issue in every segment of the industry. And you hope, because we love golf so much, that there would be more rock stars and more great, great experiences. And they're certainly out there. I've managed to see a lot of them around the world, but I wouldn't say it's always the norm. But people have to realize and understand that, that impression, just like you had with McKinnon Brothers, family run. It's on a family property that goes back 200 years, but you're right. They're happy and grateful. That's a great word, grateful that you're there. And I think, even I had to remind staff when I was working in a pro shop back in the day, and even when I had a golf store, be grateful that those people were walking through the door, because they make a choice to do that. And you owe it to them to make sure that that experience is as good as it can be.
And if you can't do that, you're in the wrong industry. You're in the customer service.
It seems that way.
I hate to break it to anyone that works in golf. You're not in the golf industry. You are in the customer service industry. People don't realize that. But that was my quick tangent. Shout out to McKinnon. They've finally canned one of the best beers, in my opinion. The Brothers Ale is now in a can. You can usually only get it at Red House in Kingston. Now you can get it in a can. Go pick it up. Free pub. Don't care. They deserve it.
They're awesome. Yeah, they're awesome.
So they get a birdie for the week from me. But as you touched on, I picked up a bottle of wine. Now we're 1-1. So the next time we see each other, we're just going to be exchanging bottles of wine at the simulator, hopefully in a couple weeks. Why don't we run through the week that was, though? Justin Thomas won the Players' Championship, but we're going to hit up our birdie, our par, our bogey, and our honorable mention. Scotty, why don't you start it off with your birdie?
Yeah, my birdie is definitely relevant to the week past. And, you know, watching the Players Championship, I think was a great experience. And I think one of the things that people recognize that. You can see it on social media. The video and internet coverage that the Players provided, you know, with shot by shot, you could see every single player, your own stream, you know, the tour cast. There's just everything was there that you could possibly want, whether you wanted to watch the player that, you know, was at the end of the pack or the top of the leaderboard. I think they just did a great job with that. And I think that is necessary for this tournament to be at the level that it is, to be a, you know, an important championship. And I think that experience is what we're going to see more in the future. We've talked about this on the podcast. The more that we see that, the more people are going to be engaged with those broadcasts and streams and make it that much better. So that's my birdie this week, is just that broad coverage that they provided for the Players Championship.
I love it. I think it's the future. It's the future. Eventually, yeah. The Farmers Championship or Travelers Farmership, whatever we want to call them. Both of them will have that at some point in the next couple of years, and I think it will make it for a much better viewing experience. I agree. I'm going with the Players Championship. I'm going with the course setup to start. I'm giving two birdies this week and two honorable mentions. Just
wow. All right.
You know. It's our podcast.
It's like a bouquet, right?
We can make our own rules. The course setup, I was stoked on. I thought on Thursday and Friday, they set it up hard to make it difficult, not too hard. And then on Saturday, it went a little easier and made it softer. And then on Sunday, right back to hard again. And it was like, you know, we want to bring people in back on Saturday. They made it to this point. Let's tighten up that field. And on Sunday, it's like, who's the best? Who can stand this golf course up on Sunday? And I'm wondering, when we get to our interview, to bring this up with Ryan, if that's actually something they consciously did, or was that just the elements at play? I'm going to give him credit and claim it to be conscious, because that's how good of a tournament director he is. And we do have him on the podcast this week, as per usual. But I just thought it was great. I thought it was great entertainment Thursday through Sunday. I don't know how you left your TV on Sunday from, you know, the start of the front nine, everything was happening. Bryson DeChambeau topped one, and they showed it, and then they posted it on social media.
Yeah. I know. What? Which you don't normally see. And I mean, you know, showing a shot with an apex of 5 feet was incredible. Yeah. And I think it was great, because people thought, you know what, how nervous would I be if I was playing for $2.7 million, and all of a sudden they see what Westwood and DeChambeau did on four, and they're like, these guys are human. Yeah. These guys are human. That's how I feel when I'm playing for my club championship.
It was cool, because my wife was watching, and she was like, that's what I would do. And like, and usually we'll have it on the TV. I'm sure your wife is the same way. It's just on the TV at this point. Yeah. It's like, oh my God, I've been doing this for 30 years, I guess. I'll give you 30. Sure. Try not to be too rude. For us, it's been, you know, the last 10, 12 years together, where golf's just always on Sunday. And it's just, and then every once in a while, she might peek up. Forever it was Adam Scott, and now it's like, it's top golf shots and bad golf shots that entertain her. And it's like, you know, I've only got worse looking, Adam Scott's only got better looking, but hey, it's the bad golf shots. So that's what the public likes to see, these professionals look like the rest of us. And it brought her attention to the TV, so I'm sure it brought the attention to tons of people to the TV.
Yeah, and I think you're right. That's the experience that you get when you go to an event as well, that people get to see that these guys are not perfect. And, you know, they do mess up. They duff chips. They, you know, chip over greens. They hit wild shots. You don't necessarily see that in the highlight packages all the time. But you know what? The PGA Tour knows now, with the broadcast the way they are, they have to basically show those scars and show those scabs. And it makes people, I think, connect with the tour much better. So I think it's good. And you're right, the course setup was awesome. And I think a lot of people, even though they knew by Saturday night that, you know, Bryson and Westwood were obviously in the mix, they also saw that there was a ton of people right behind them that all had an opportunity, because the golf course is the way it is. And you knew things could change by a lot on Sunday.
I agree. My other birdie for the week goes to Steve Sands. I brought this guy up, I believe, 2 weeks ago. This guy is an elite 18th green interview. He will ask the questions. He's getting grown men to cry on TV. He knows the tough question to ask. And he's been on the record. He's like, I don't love asking it, but I know my job. Yeah. Right? Like, you don't want to make a guy cry, but at the same time, Justin Thomas obviously wanted to honor his grandfather, and he asked about him, and I thought it was just great theater. It's hard not to. I don't know about you. I felt some onions being cut in the back of my throat, getting a little dry. I thought it was great theater. Steve Sands, just an all-timer. I would love to get him on the podcast at some point. Guy loves his hockey too. Just seems like a great dude. And I just love that they kept the footage rolling a 3 seconds longer, where they showed him, Justin, being like, you had to do that to me, because that happens all the time, right? They usually think the camera cuts, and that was where the conversations like that happen. I thought it was great theater. I thought it was great TV. And give me that guy interviewing anybody that wins anything at this point. Give him interviewing the spelling bee contest going forward. I'm sure he'll find some information.
And he does it in a way too that's not gratuitous. You know, he might be leading there, but it's how he does it, and that's what makes him a pro. He's not doing it for the sake of effect or the fact that, you know, he's going to be the guy to ask that.
No.
It's his job, and he's going to ask it, but he's going to do it in a way that's at least sensitive and makes sense as far as the narrative of the conversation.
100%. Why don't we hit our pars for the week? I have a feeling we have the same one, Scotty.
Probably. Lee Westwood, really torn about this. He had that great opportunity. There was a lot of people that were cheering for him come Sunday. In the end, though, you know what? The fact that he didn't win, I still couldn't feel bad for him, because he's done so much in those last couple weeks to show people that he's still a fantastic player, that, you know, winning the race to Dubai, recently last year, really wasn't a fluke. And, you know, he still can be a presence for a while. We didn't get the fairy tale ending for him. Obviously, we got an ending that a lot of people were happy with as well. But I wasn't 100% disappointed in the fact of, you know, how the day played out for him, especially when you consider, you know, the caddy story, how happy he is in his life. So it was a good par for me.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go with Lee Westwood. It's a par. I think he feels it's a par. He's been there so many times before. I saw a great tweet that Lee Westwood's going to just kill it on the Champions Tour, because this guy can win 3-day tournaments like the best of them. I couldn't find that. I wanted to find the stats of how many tournaments this guy has been leading after 54 holes and what the finish has been. He's also won so many tournaments where he would have been leading after 54 holes as well. So it was a great week. I thought he turn back the clock in terms of, like, obviously his girlfriend doesn't do much out there. She carries the bag, keeps him, you know, in the right level mind, but she's not giving him yardage, she's not pulling clubs. Very simple, the dream job. If any player out there wants me to come do that, we can figure out a salary. I don't even need 10%. That sounds simple. Let me know. I'm available. I'll make it work. But it's awesome. I also heard his son is now caddying for him at Augusta National. I think he just gets it now. He's like, hey, you know, I had my chance and it didn't work out. Cool. Doesn't matter. It's just golf. Yep. At this point, I'm just going to make my career as comfortable as possible, have as much fun as possible. These chances are going to come. Sometimes they're going to work. Sometimes they aren't. Here we are. I'm playing great. That's all that matters. Hey, I didn't win. Whatever.
Yep. Enjoy life. That's all you can do. What have you got for your bogey this week?
Yeah, I'm going with DJ removing himself from the Olympics. I think it's super early. Last time he did it, his answer was a little different.
the Zika virus.
This one, it's just my schedule. Like, it just call a spade a spade. Hey, they pay me a lot of money to play in these tournaments versus going paying to play in the Olympics. I mean, he wouldn't actually be paying, but if you actually look at the difference he'd make playing in a PGA Tour event around the same time, I think it's silly. I think the future will show this, the Olympics, of being that almost that fifth major in a way, right? Ooh. Where it's like, hey, if we keep this going, it could be huge. Like, everyone thinks of Justin Rose, right? Winning that Olympic gold medal. The only one I can name since last one you played against them in the 1902 Olympics or whatever it was.
George S. Lyon in 1904.
There you go. So it's just, I think it's silly. I thought the best tweet I saw about it, a guy I've played with a couple times in Flagstick events, Aaron Bruce, he said, "It's been a long time since any sports at the Olympics consisted of amateur athletes. Only last time I checked, only boxing and wrestling required amateur athletes. I don't see how having amateur swimmers at the Olympics would make it more interesting or better competition." And that's where my head's at as well. No one else does it. Let's get the best of the best there. Yeah. Let's make it another tournament. I think it's a bogey. I think it's silly.
Yeah, I think the train has left the station on the pro amateur thing with the Olympics. I mean, I think the end here though is do the Olympics continue? Are they sustainable long term? And in that case, you're right. That may become more of a regret. When later on, and he gets done his career and goes, I had that chance. I was the best player in the world. And, I missed out going there. I mean, I get it. People say, well, you got to go and represent your country. He doesn't have an obligation to go and do that. But I just think about the personal regret more than anything that, he'll get done. He's got whatever, 25 wins now. He'll have whatever handful of majors. He'll be going into a Hall of Fame. But, he'll have that opportunity that he'll have missed. And I think the more that he gets a chance to maybe talk to other Olympic athletes and to see what their experience is like in going to the Olympics, I think he might better understand it. And, he might want to have a little chat with his father-in-law there and, let him know what that's like to go and represent your country and the pride that it takes to be, the best in the world among all athletes, not just your sport, and to be there and doing that.
Yeah. You think Wayne doesn't regret not winning Olympic gold? It's the only thing he doesn't have.
Yeah.
Right. And Dustin might get there too, right? He's got two of the four majors. He's going to look back at it. He'll probably win a players one day. He might win the other ones. He might win 50 times on tour. Right. And if he looks back and that's the only thing that he's missing, maybe he regrets it. It is Dustin Johnson. Maybe
he doesn't care. Maybe he really truly doesn't.
Yeah, who knows? What about you? What's your bogey for the week?
My bogey for the week, I've been talking to a fair number of people of late in both sides of the border, but people involved in going for fittings for golf equipment. And golf equipment now, as most people know, is, it's not a light investment. People are spending a fair amount of money on these products. And just listening to the experiences that some of these people are having when they're going to places to have a fitting, when they're about to spend $3,000 or $750 on a driver, it's not very good. I mean, we've had Ian Fraser on this podcast, back in episode 81, and he explained a lot of the things that they do at Tour Experience Golf and, how it's so important to, make sure that they take care of that person that's making that investment, that I'm really disappointed in some of the outlets and some of the things. And they vary, there's stores, there's pros, there's all sorts of different things. If you're going to be responsible for selling high-end premium golf equipment, be prepared to invest the time to make sure that you can make sure your customers have a great experience and get the right clubs and the right equipment so that they leave happy. And I think that's just my bogey for me, just a wake-up call for a lot of people in the industry. These are not $100 investments for drivers now. Drivers are upwards of $750. People are putting a lot of hard-earned money into that. They expect a little bit more from the experience, and people just have to step up if they're retailing.
Yeah, and just quickly on TXG, just want to, give a shout out to our guy Matt over there. Very public about his mental health struggles right now. We're thinking about you. I haven't met Matt. Everything I've heard, though, great things, great guy. So we're thinking about you. Thank you for sharing it, and hopefully you're back soon and doing what you do best. So quick shout out to Matt at TXG. I think you had a great bogey. Hey, people pay a lot of money for these things. Do it right. If you're going to do it, do it right. You know me, I don't bring it up often. 2014 Fitter of the Year. I like to believe the reason that happened was I gave an experience every single time. And if you're not doing that, you're doing it wrong. So I'll give that bogey too. I don't know who you were talking to, but I'm giving the bogey regardless. I'm going to hit my honorable mentions. I got two this week, Scotty. Do you want to go first on your honorable mentions since I'm going to take the floor maybe for a couple minutes, or you want me to go one and then you go one and then I'll finish with my final?
No, I'll take care of mine and then you can double up on yours. Mine's a quick one. Honorable mention to Brendan Todd playing at TPC Sawgrass Stadium course. The shank head on 17 was just absolutely epic.
Okay, yeah.
But what was cool was just how he reacted to it. And, you know, all he could do was laugh. He didn't slam his club, didn't break a club or whatever. I mean, he just knew how funny it was. You know, still had a positive reaction to it. I mean, it's done. Once it's done, there's nothing you can do. Just a big shout out for him, knowing that, you know, those two shots he probably lost are worth a lot of money.
Probably 100 grand, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So how he reacted was just great. And I think it made a lot of levity around it, because I'm sure the players that are playing with him and anybody that was around the tee probably didn't know what to say. And then as soon as he reacted with a little bit of a laugh, it probably made it a lot easier for everyone else.
Yeah, I've never... That's a lie. I have seen a shank live. I caddied a shank one time.
Oh, boy.
I wonder what Ryan Hart would have done if that ball landed on that island. Because as the tournament director, I would assume it's his job to find a way to get Brendan Todd to that island to hit that shot. It's in play, right?
If it's up there, that's a great question.
Yeah. You got to play. So I'll make sure to ask Ryan that to see what his thoughts are. All right, I got two honorable mentions quickly. I got a birdie for Michelle Wee. She will be returning next week to play. It also sounds like she's playing the ANA in a couple weeks. You know, she did retire, a year and a half, 2 years ago. I remember us talking on this podcast, will she ever play again? I said yes back then. I thought good things. I thought she'd miss it. This is all she's really known. You kind of said, you know, you weren't sure, but she took that break, you know, became a mother, and the itch is still there. She can still play. I'm looking forward to it. I hope it goes really well. I actually went back and forth. Is this going to be a birdie or a par? And then I thought about it. There's only a win here. Nice to see her back. My other honorable mention is I'm giving out another DQ.
Oh my, you're folding this week.
I'm giving out another disqualification. And this one goes to daylight savings time. I'm done with the time change. It makes no sense. Why, Scott, what did they tell you as a kid why we changed the clocks? Because there's no reason for it. There's no reason for it.
I don't even remember. I mean, it was just something that happened. I mean, really, you know, the farmers liked it a lot more than anything. But that was back in the day when we had a lot of rural community more than anything, as far as time and stuff like that. But it doesn't really matter now anyways. I mean, if you think about that for agriculture, everybody works in the dark anyway. So it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it's dumb. It makes no sense. I hate it. I'm sure Ryan Hart hated it. Can you imagine like the amount of like the little amount of sleep that he's going to get during the tournament week,
yeah,
to then cut an hour on him because now we're flipping back the clocks? Just dumb. Just
how do you react to it? Like for me on Sunday, I had a morning tea time with the simulator with the boys at Accra, and I was exhausted. Like I don't think I woke up for five holes, which, you know, probably explained how I played. But I don't know. It just screws you up for the day.
It doesn't do anything. It's just, that's the point. I'm making the pitch of, I think we should go China, one time zone, cross the world though. I'm not even talking just Canada. I'm talking one time zone. Why does it need to be 5 o'clock when you're having dinner? Why can't it be 1300 hours? And that's when it doesn't matter. Let's make it easy. Travel will be easy. Everything will be easier. Nobody late going across provinces and in countries. I'm done with it. That's my pitch as a prime minister. I clearly you're done with my pitch of the DQ. And that was the week that was. Why don't we hit more of the week? We didn't talk too much about the players. Why would we talk about it when we have the tournament director with us? So why don't we head over to our feature interview with Ryan Hart, who was on the grounds for the last couple months as the tournament director. As you know, we've had on this podcast many times. Great guy, great interview. Ryan Hart from the Players' Championship. All right, folks, let's welcome back Ryan Hart to the podcast, tournament director of the Players' Championship. Perfect time to have you back on, Ryan. Ryan, how are you right now? It's been a long week. How are you feeling?
Starting to get a little bit of sleep back. I think I got a few more than 3.5 hours last night, so feeling a little more human. And I guess now getting used to being former tournament director, so that's just... You know, it is what it is, and excited to get back to Canada and start focusing on 24. But what a week. I mean, it's been a ride, and 24 months to put on the 47th edition of the Players Championship. It was nice to finally put a bow on it.
It was a great one too. I mean, you can't beat that finish. It was exciting right to the end. I said off the top, one of my birdies for the week was the setup of this golf course. I feel like you purposefully made it difficult the first 2 days, made it a little bit easier on the Saturday to make it, you know, jumble up that scoring on the Saturday and right back to extremely difficult on the Sunday, which just made amazing theater. Was that consciously done or just the natural elements coming into play?
Honestly, it was the natural elements. I mean, Jeff Blott's funny enough. I just left having a conversation with Jeff Blotz, who's the superintendent at TPC Sawgrass, and we were kind of recapping the week. And, you know, he had the good fortune, as he would put it, because it's never about him, but he had the good fortune of the weather leading up and the months leading up. I mean, I think as golf, as we all know, has been extremely successful through the pandemic, one of the few things that people have been able to get out and do. At TPC Sawgrass, they didn't have the corporate business that was coming in. I mean, they had their member business, but the member base is, you know, a lot smaller than a lot of courses would have. So the amount of play throughout the year was definitely, it was there, but not necessarily as big as it may have been in the past. So there was some benefit to that. And then in the spring, he just said that, you know, from the overseed, we had the best scenario we could have, with Mother Nature. And I think that just, it was a gradual build through the week. And honestly, it was the breezes. I mean, you had the predominant winds were there, but they were a little different two of the days. And so I think that kind of played with the guys a little bit. And then the reverse side is when you looked at the build on 17, it had changed a little bit this year. You know, structures were built a little bit different due to, you know, some sponsors who couldn't come because corporate policy wouldn't let them travel and whatnot. So we had to actually kind of shift everything in the bowl a little one way. And that in itself, in 16, 17 especially, created different wind patterns through there. So I think that it was things you don't think about as you're doing them. But when you see the final product come out and you listen to the players and they talk about, you know, an 11 mile an hour wind that, you know, normally they wouldn't necessarily think about, but it might got through in some areas and didn't in others that they would have in previous years. So I think it was a great, you know, hopefully everybody felt it was a great week overall, but it definitely had some challenge for sure.
You know, you mentioned how long it took for the completion of one tournament, I guess. How much anxiety was it for you and for the entire team, you know, heading into this, knowing what had happened the year previous and, you know, I guess wondering how these things were going to play out this year?
You know, the team, you know, hats off to the team as a whole. I mean, they worked really three parallel paths the whole way along. You know, when we got through last year and the upset and the, you know, the disappointment of not being able to do what we had planned 12 months to do, but also knowing that we had to do the right thing. You get through that, you work with the sponsors, and then you have this sort of period of a number of months where you're sort of, are we going to have fans? Aren't we going to have fans? So we were planning for really three scenarios, you know, zero fans, 10% of what we normally would have and 20% of what we normally have. So I think that's where a lot of the anxiety came from is until we got to late fall, we didn't necessarily know what the outcome was going to be. So once that decision was made, it was really full steam ahead and go from there. But as you well know, I mean, we're not out of this yet. So we were working with our sponsors and right up to the very end on who could come, who couldn't come and, you know, juggling along the way. But I think the team responded extremely well and health and safety protocols were, you know, the number one through five focus and knock on wood. I think we got through it and everybody felt comfortable on property and it performed well.
I was going to ask you that because, you know, being up in Canada, our protocols are definitely a little bit different, especially compared to a state like Florida. Was it a culture shock for you, being that you've been in Canada basically this whole time, to go down to Florida and just see, hey, we're open down here for business? Like, and just almost, you're almost going back in time. I wouldn't even know what that would, what I would feel going into something like that.
Oh, 100%. I got down February 28th and just even leaving the airport, and stopping and grabbing some food on the way to the hotel, it was culture shock. I mean, you know, being, as you well know, being based in Winnipeg, we've been locked down. I think it was November 4th when they locked restaurants down, the second time, and believe they opened them up to 20 or 25% capacity the week before I left, and knowing what I was doing, I mean, we didn't go out anywhere. So really that was the first experience in seeing people out and about doing things. And yeah, I mean, you're taken back by it, but I have to say that when it came to the tournament, generally speaking, people did the right thing. I mean, I think people were inherently happy to be out at an event like that. You know, the guests on property, I would say 95%, you know, had their masks on and respected the, you know, no food and beverage on the rope line. And, you know, some people up in the suites where we said, no, the first two rows in your suite, you couldn't have food or beverage, and you had to have your masks on. I mean, there was definitely a lot more infrastructure that went into this year's event from a volunteer staff and security perspective to ensure that. But, you know, for the most part, I think people were just happy to be out and to be enjoying a sporting event. And, you know, I think I only got my face, you know, reamed out, you know, a half a dozen times. And if you extrapolate that over our entire staff, that's pretty good when you look at the amount of people that were there.
Yeah, I saw a great tweet on the weekend that basically said, I don't know who I'm more jealous of, the golfers playing golf right now or the fans mm-hmm. seeing a live sporting event. And I actually at first was like, oh, it's easy, it's the golf. And I was like, I don't think it is, because I feel like we've had golf, right? And in Canada, we've been able to play golf, but we haven't had that excitement, that shared joy with a stranger of a big putt or a shot or, you know, a goal, however you want. Like, we haven't had that yeah. It would be such a unique feeling. What was that first roar like for you just being on the grounds? It must have just brought chills through your whole body.
I think it brought chills and it brought a what's wrong. it did. I mean, we haven't heard that in so long. I mean, we hadn't heard that since Thursday of Players a year ago. And so I think there was some excitement, I mean, to that level. I mean, I know we've been tearing back and baby stepping our way back in as we need to and should be doing, but it was the hair on the back of your neck stood up when you heard the first few, and then you almost got this adrenaline from it, even as the team operating it. I mean, we're not obviously inside the ropes, and you heard the players talk about, you know, the feeling of having fans back, but it was just awesome to see people out. And it was like a baby step back to normalcy. You know, we're far from there. And we have a long road to go, but it was a baby step back to normalcy for sure.
So, I mean, talking about the players and talking about the fans as well, what kind of commentary did you hear from them as well about that situation of being back there, especially given, you know, a lot of those people were probably there last year, didn't get to see the whole tournament played, then all of a sudden, you know, it obviously plays out this year.
I think generally speaking, in listening to the players talk and some of the fans and clients, there was this little bit of emptiness or unfinished business that was there. And I think that there was, yeah, I would say across the board in all parties, there was a sense of being grateful, you know, that a year later we're able to get to this point. It's not back to what we were in the past and will be in the future, but there was definitely, you know, this feeling of gratefulness. But it was, you know, a few of the players, you know, I heard remark that it was a bit eerie, you know, because it ended so abruptly. But to be able to come back a year later, play 4 days, and actually hand out the trophy to an unbelievable champion after an amazing competition. We couldn't be more happy.
It's funny. You talked about the eeriness. It was watching the video from last year and you see the guys packing their bags and they're coming out and they're getting into cars. That was eerie in its own right. And then you also see the footage of the Thursday and that was eerie in its own right. And then it's almost like, cause it's like now knowing what we know, like, why aren't you even wearing a mask getting in that car with that stranger? Even that you're worried. And now it's like, even this, seeing the full 360. Now we're back a year later and just seeing even that small group of fans, it was loud, but that small group fan was almost eerie in its own right. It's like a year later, it doesn't matter what angle you look at. I don't want to say it doesn't feel right. It's just off, but it does feel like we are heading back to normal. It just must make you feel happy knowing, where the tour's going and the success that tournament had. And as you mentioned, having an ultimately great winner with a great back nine, as the tournament director, you can't plan for something like that. But when that does happen, where I don't know how many players were in the mix, 9 players in the mix, probably going to that back nine, it was anybody's ball game at that point. What was going through your thoughts at that point, being the tournament director?
I believe it was 7 players within 2 shots of the lead. Either it was going into the back nine or late in the front nine. I think Sunday is one of those days. I mean, you're trying to get the team, and it was a unique experience, honestly, for me this year, because I was working with the gentleman who will be taking my job as I transition to the President's Cup. But I said to him, Sunday's kind of the day where you actually sort of get a chance to step back and take it in on a few occasions because of the health and safety protocols and masking up and those sorts of things. I wouldn't say it was what it normally was in that sense. We looked at the board and saw a couple of TVs a few times, but the roars told us that something was happening and made us go look at something. Cause we had this sort of theme as a team that we weren't going to let up. You know, when we went Saturday night, you know, we were in the ops trailer out back, and it was like, we've gotten us to here. We can't let up. We've got to make sure that, you know, we're doing the right things and people aren't, you know, unmasked, and we can't have a scenario. Now, obviously, we're not out of the water. I mean, you know, we'll find out in the next couple of weeks, you know, if there is a ripple effect from that, and hopefully there isn't. But it was different that way, because you do normally have that opportunity to take in play a little bit on Sunday, and that just wasn't here. I mean, my phone was blowing up with, you know, people back home saying, did you see this shot? Did you, Bryson just topped it on 4, you know, like, and I'm like, wow, something's happening here. But the few times that I did get to see it, and you saw JT's, you know, rise up the leaderboard, between Lee Westwood and the story, you know, being 47 and how he's played the last few weeks. And some people say it's out of the blue. I look at it and go, you can't win the race to Dubai by only winning one event without having consistent play in the last 12 to 18 months. So I don't know that I'd ever say it's out of the blue. But to see that to lead off with the Bryson Lee rematch, if you will, from API, to JT doing what he did after, you know, the last number of months that he's had and the challenges that he's gone through, the storylines for you all in the media were there and writing themselves. But I go back to, even in the trophy ceremony, like, we were standing there watching going, wow, we have so much to be grateful for, and we are so blessed to be here, to have done what we've done collectively as a community and as a tournament staff and the players and the tour. But you look at a guy like Justin Thomas, who is so grounded in his family, and the emotion that poured out from their family. I don't know that there was too many dry eyes in that trophy ceremony.
Shout out to Steve Sands. That guy, he's on a streak unlike any other right now of making players cry. And I want him at the end of every sporting event interviewing. He can find anything to make somebody cry at this point. Go ahead, Scotty.
I mean, the interview with Justin's father, I mean,
yeah.
I mean, that was, I was standing about probably 6 or 8 feet away from him when he was doing it. And, you just stop and you had to take it in to really understand what this moment meant for them, not only for their son winning the Players, but as a family, they've had a challenging time. And it just, I think the emotions all came out for many, many reasons.
Yeah, it did. And I think the spectators, you know, and the fans responded to that as well. You know, you said your phone was blowing up and you didn't get much chance to, you know, kind of glance at the leaderboard or whatever. But how many of those texts were Canadians going, hey, Corey Connors is doing something special?
Oh, well, you guys know Kevin Blue well. And
Kevin, he was down there.
Yeah, Kevin actually was on the property and we walked around for a little bit. So I did see a couple of holes. And at that time, Corey hadn't kind of hit those holes where he started rattling off a few. And I looked up at a board at one point and I'm like, he could flirt with the course record. And so I texted Kevin and he was like, yeah, he's flushing it. Like, this could be special. And then it makes you think about, I mean, you have that pride, obviously, that Corey's Canadian. I'm not supposed to obviously lobby one way or another, but
or us, yeah.
I ain't media.
I said to somebody when I saw it, I'm like, this could be Ricky Fowler like from 2015. I mean, Ricky was out earlier and posted a number, and the field came back. So, I mean, we had a playoff meeting as we always would, but at that moment when. I think when Corey was on 16, I said that playoff scenario might come into play. But it obviously, it didn't in that scenario. And then with Lee, unfortunately missing his putt on 17, it didn't come in there either. But it was a mix of emotions along the way. And between my phone and the roars and seeing the odd scoreboard and television screen, it looked great. I actually did have opportunity to watch the final round last night before bed. I didn't get through quite all of it, but it's always wild. It's almost like a little out of body experience to sit back and watch it on TV. And see what it really looked like, but it looked like it was a great finish.
Did you get any screen time? Pick up yourself any background scenes at all? Nothing.
No, I always tell my mother. She always says, Ryan, why are you never on TV? I said, I spend a life in the shadows. That is what we do. If we're on TV, there's something
You've
going
done
on.
Something. The tournament's been canceled.
Yeah. So always, I think when Rory won. I mistakenly got snapped taking the trophy out of his hands, which is never good. Why are you taking the trophy out of his hands? So when Justin, I did the same thing this year, but I looked around before the cameras were in sight and made sure that I didn't get back on again. But it's definitely not about us. It's about our members, our players, and the Players Championship.
Well, it's not in your hands now. It's going to be passed on, obviously. But, you know, this tournament is obviously elevated to a very important championship. I mean, we look at things like the purse being $15 million now and $2.7 million to the winner and everything that goes with it. You know, what can the tour do to make this event, you know, progress more and more and be elevated to even a higher status?
You know, I go back and I recall what Jason Day said in his press conference in 2019. And he said, from a player perspective, we feel it's almost there. And it's up to the media to start talking about it. It's not our place to wave that flag or do that. We're going to continue to try to, you know, Jeff Plotz and his agronomy team are going to try to keep elevating the presentation of it. We're going to I mean, the amount of national sponsors that have started to gravitate to Jacksonville and to the Players Championship, that will continue to grow. But I think ultimately it's a broader consensus of it. You know, the players speak of it in a high regard. At the end of the day, I think it's a combination ultimately of the media and the players to give it that. But in today's day, when you really look at it, does it need to be called a major?
No.
I don't know that it does. It's the Players Championship. It's got its own sort of aura. I heard someone call it the modern major because of what it is. I mean, it's 47 years old now, finally, twice. But it's their tournament. It's their championship. And as long as the players have a sense of pride about it, I think that's our number one priority. They want to say this is ours. And whether they want to say it's a major or the media wants to say it's a major, that's up to them and you all. But we're just going to try to keep doing the best we can to present it in the best light for our members.
At the end of the day, the product speaks for itself, right? If people are watching it more than any other tournament and the players want to be there more than any other tournament, it's, as you said, that's what matters. It's called the players and the players are deciding it's important. Hey, if it's a major, it's a major. Who really cares? I think it's, for years, it went underappreciated. I think at this point, it's starting to become appreciated, and it's only going to keep going up. And you must be happy to hand that off at this point, it obviously being at its highest.
I think we're our own worst critics, and I don't think we're ever going to say it's at its highest, but it's on a trajectory that I have all the confidence in our team that it will continue to grow. And everybody across the organization is so vested in this event. And there's a sense of pride in it from top to bottom. And it's in a great place because of many, many, many people. And I have no doubt that it will continue to go on a trajectory to, if someone calls it a major, great. If someone calls it, you know, the greatest entertainment or sports entertainment in our sport, then if that's the moniker, great. It's not for us to say, but it's in a good spot.
Well, you know, we talked about it being underappreciated. We had a listener throwing a question. These are rare for interviews, and they wanted to know, what are the underappreciated holes on the entire facility, and what is the hardest hole to set up each year?
I saw that one actually, and I was excited that they sent it so I could actually think about that a little bit ahead of time. I think there's a few. I mean, I think there's many. I mean, everyone wants to talk about the finishing holes of 16, 17, 18. But, you know, you go to the front nine. I mean, the way Dean Beeman and Pete Dye built this golf course, there is no gimme holes. I mean,
the drive on one, like, can you imagine a five handicap? You know, I claimed myself to be a five handicap. There's nowhere to go. You can't go left. You're in a bunker, right? It looks water. Like you're going, yeah, or water. Like there's everything's there. Like there's nowhere to go. That's only built for professionals. There's a reason it's called the stadium course.
And if you play it from the back, it's insanely intimidating, and you probably need to go see a psychiatrist when you get off 18. But underappreciated holes, I would say. Many people don't realize number five is the hardest hole on the course in the tournament.
Such a hard drive.
It's a hard drive. Guys try to get to the speed slot at the top of the hill. If you get it, great. But the risk reward on that is if you get it to the speed slot, you got to hope it kicks right to keep you in the fairway. If it doesn't, you go into a pond tucked away on the left that you cannot see off the tee. If you block it right, you're in a bunker or water. And it is, by today's standard, a longer approach for a par four. I think number five is completely underrated. Number six was Pete Dye's favorite hole on the course. You know, it's a shortish par four, but it makes you think about driver. I think I saw a stat earlier today, and I think 50 people in the field hit driver.
Wow.
On it, because it tightens up. I mean, it's still gettable, but it tightens up so much. I think that when you look at 15 is 100% one of the most underappreciated holes on that golf course. I mean, Rory said his best shot of the year last or in 19 was his 6-iron out of the bunker to 15 feet to make birdie heading into the final three holes. I mean, to get through that chute and have to hit a little slider, you got to be pretty confident in your trajectory to go up over the trees and hit a draw. But look at what JT did. He hit it perfect, but he almost hit it too far. He went into the first cut. If that goes another few feet, he's taking a drop off the path, or he's in rough. And then I think, you know, 14 is a beast. It's just a beast of a hole. Honestly, 12
sounds like every hole is underappreciated.
Well, everybody focuses on the last three, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
12 this year. So we played it, and I give our rules committee all the credit in the world. 12, we played back Thursday, Friday, and then played it up Saturday, Sunday, thinking behind it being, okay, Thursday, Friday, if you start on 10, you're in a drivable par four that if you put it on the green, great. But if you don't, the trouble, I mean, you're looking at a double.
You're out of the tournament.
That could be your third hole.
Yeah.
Right? So playing it back, it altered the amount of drivers hit. And I think that one is just, that's going to take time. I mean, you look at 17 at Phoenix. 17 took a lot of time to be seen as one of the better, you know, risk reward par fours on tour. And I think, you know, we did that at rental. What was it? 2016, 2015, 2016, when we rented it and made it a drivable par four in the routing that it currently is. And I think that one 10 years from now, people are going to be looking at it going, wow. I mean, there's some serious, serious entertainment value on that hole. But for me, 15, I when anybody ever asked me, and if I said one hole, I would say it's 15.
So is 12 the hardest one to set up then currently?
Well, I think it's hard from the standpoint is you want it to have teeth, but you want it to be fair. And so the fact that the rules committee decided to play it back this year, the first two rounds, I think was the fairness part. And I think to play it up on Saturday, Sunday gave it the teeth that it deserves.
So I'm going to throw you this. Since now it's not even ever possible. I mean, currently it's not your job anymore, but let's say you could change one hole. You're waving a magic wand. The setup can look anything, however you like. What hole is it? What do you do with it? And this, yeah, take it as crazy as possible. Or is that, it's, hey, I've actually thought about this and we just haven't been able to get it done.
Change a hole.
I guess I should have went through the listener question queue so you had some time to think about it.
You know what? One of the neatest things about it, and I was reminded of it Sunday when Dean Beeman was there with Tim Fincham and Jay Monahan as the three commissioners in the trophy presentation, is I think that people, Dean Beeman doesn't get enough credit for his foresight into the modern game and today's stadium golf. I mean, you look at the ninth hole. It was built as a three-shot par five when Persimmon Woods were in play. You look at it today, yeah, there are players in the field that can get there in two. The percentage of players that actually land it and hold it in two is a very small percentage. And the penalty around that is unbelievable. So when you say, would I change anything inside the ropes? Yeah, there's tweaks here and there, but the course that Dean Beeman and Pete Dye built, it stands up today with, you're talking about three holes that have been altered since the early 80s. The changes that I think we would look at as an organization is how can we help fans enjoy the experience broader throughout the course. So you look at the 15th hole, as we've been talking about, underappreciated. How do we rethink that hole? rethink how do we put structures on that hole so that if you can't get into the stadium, here's your step, if you will, to get close to the stadium. And then if something opens up, you can move up there. You look at 12. How do we put people in structures on the right side of that hole? Because it's far enough away from the final stretch that you could get a little bit more excitement on there. And, you know, maybe it's a daily upgraded ticket or something like that. How do we do that? But I think those are the things that we talk about on evolving the property, is how do we spread it out a little bit more? People follow the feature groups. They get around. Like we said moments ago, is there are so many great holes that people just don't get to see. We need to help give them a reason to go to different holes and really enjoy the experience through 18 of them.
On Sunday, Brendan Todd hit one of the most famous shots on 17, a dead shank, and he almost landed it on that island there. Now, hypothetically, if it had landed on the island and stayed dry, as the tournament director, is there plans in place of how you would have got him to that island?
I would say absolutely not.
Related to that, though, there are two islands,
I guess, out there, technically.
Yeah, but there's that peninsula that used to be there that actually was part of that island. Would that be something the tour would ever consider bringing back? I mean, you know, if Brendan Todd wasn't in the tournament, just to make sure that they're safe. But, you know, just the viewing experience alone for that, to be able to look over to 16 and 17 from what it used to be, would be incredible.
You know, there was a venue that we built differently this year that was pretty much in line with that tree. Everything was shifted over a little bit, and it was pretty much in line with that tree. It was called Champions Club, and it was sort of a high top, like you were in a bar, sort of table product with some seating out front. That venue this year may have been one of the best vantage points that we've had. Because you could see everything coming up 16. You had a full view of 17. I mean, just the positioning of it and how it played out. I believe it's there. And I think that if you are a fan with a stadium pass and standing on the grass on there in that walk, to do that, and I'm not going to say I know what the long-term plan of that property is, but to do that, you take away that 150-yard walk that we've heard so many past champions and people who have played in the event talk about, that is the walk where you have to be mentally strong. And I think you alter that experience if you do that, but that is, I will say, that is just a personal opinion.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Damn. Yeah, never even thought about that.
Rory said, he goes, it's the hardest 150-yard walk that you have to make because you know what you've just done on 16. And when you're walking from 16 to 17, you look to the left, you have fans screaming at you. So you're
Florida fans, for the record, too.
But you're, as much as you're fired up and there's adrenaline that comes for that, but then if you have to look right, then you're staring at that island for 150 feet. Like that can get into your head. You know, you've just kind of got to focus, go through, and then, you know, look at the task at hand when you get to that tee box. And I mean, we've had opportunity to play it, and whether there's fans on the ground or you're, you know, in September, you still have those nerves. And I mean, it's a diabolical experience.
had to be said. One last one from me. Obviously there was a decision made very early in the week about an internal out of bounds, 18 to 9, knowing obviously that there's a safety issue there. Was that something that was ever thought of before? I mean, you know, that line had obviously been taken before in by a Canadian, apparently, junior. But was that something that had sometimes been considered before? And then all of a sudden it just sort of came back in as soon as you guys heard maybe the conversation about Bryson taking that line?
There's been a lot of conversation, funny enough, over the years about people looking at that line. And obviously Bryson bringing it up, I think when you look at, so that it, you're right, it was a junior and the junior players that both rounds hit it over into nine from 18 tee across the water into nine and then played back across to 18 green because of a better angle. Obviously there was no oncoming traffic, for lack of better words, in the ninth fairway at that time, and there was no structures built. So it's a bit of a different conversation. A lot of the conversation around Bryson and his length, and again, I go back to, you know, earlier where there was the conversation about driver 9-iron on 16, and everybody was fascinated with that. Well, Sunday of 2019, Rory hit driver 9-iron into 16. Like, the length has been there for a while. Even you go back to API and number six, you know, yeah, his carry was unbelievable.
Sure. But Hank Heaney did it in 2003 in a practice.
There you go. Look at you.
So this guy's an encyclopedia.
It's been there. So a lot of these scenarios, Bryson is bringing it to the forefront, and what he's doing, make no mistake about it. I will send you guys a text later with a picture of the second or the ninth tee box on Friday when Bryson and DJ came up. It was a Tiger crowd. You know, the enthusiasm that he is bringing to the game is great for a lot of reasons right now. And I've said this on a few different podcasts or news outlets and whatnot. I think Bryson's short game is completely underrated. Mm-hmm. You don't win the US Open without an amazing short game. And if you look at his putting stats and his short game stats that week, he was unbelievable. So to, in a back-ended way of answering your question, that conversation's been there for years. The fact that someone said they were literally thinking about doing it, we had to think about the health and safety of our players and fans. I mean, if you look at the direct line to the edge of the hospitality structure there, there was genuine possibility that it could be hit, whether it was Bryson or Rory or DJ. If someone was going to try it, it's just not the safe and right thing to do in that scenario. So I think the rules committee took a lot of time and deliberated. And when they talked to Bryson about it, and they talked to every player about it, they understood.
Yeah, I think you have to. I'm sure Brian Gay was just really upset. He was looking at that line for sure. A little bit downwind, he might have made it. Ryan, we appreciate you coming on as per usual. We're looking forward to having you come on probably every single year leading up to the President's Cup in 2024 in Montreal. I hope you're proud of the work you did this past week. We are proud. It was a great theater from start to finish. Players' Championship, as you said, whether you want to call it a major or not, it's the Players' Championship, and that's all that really matters. They're happy with it. We're happy with it, and we're happy to have you on anytime.
Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate the support, and look forward to, you know, building the drive to 2024 together and everything in between. So thanks so much.
Thank you, Ryan, for that interview. We're looking forward to seeing you at the President's Cup in a few years. Hopefully we're able to catch up with him coming up.
Before then.
Yeah, he's going to be busy. It sounds like he's all over the place. Got his quarantine coming up. Don't feel kind of bad for him. But to be honest, I feel like after the last couple months he's had, he's probably just ready to not do anything for 2 weeks anyway.
Yeah, you know what, I think he deserves that more than a lot of people do, and you know, just a great guy, and you know, we're appreciative of the fact that he would take some time to come on here when we know he's probably pretty tired. But you know, as you said, great interview and great insight to the week that it was. I mean, there's a lot of things that were going on, there's a lot of things that, you know, a lot of us were probably speculating about, wondering how that tournament, that championship would play out, and he answered a lot of those questions for us.
Yeah. Scott, I don't know if you noticed, we got a kind of new intro outro music going on, bringing Brendan in. He's been, he knows musicians all over. So shout out to the Honest Heart Collective, who you can hear in and out of the interview this week. The great band, I believe they're from Sudbury or North Bay, somewhere up in that, somewhere up north. Let's just say that. But a great, awesome, great Ontario band. So thanks to them for the music this week. Scotty, what do you want to chat about? We got the Honda Classic this week. Weak Field, the Bear Trap, I believe, is where we're at. You love these sayings, just like I love the trophies. Have you ever played this course?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. It's a tough golf course. It's flat. It's windy. It's got a lot of water, water on 15 holes. I wouldn't say it's my favorite course to play. Great 18th hole. Lots of drama and stuff can happen there. Not the strongest field that you will find, unfortunately, with the reshuffle in the tour, being now between the, you know, the players, the Arnold Palmer Invitational and World Golf Championship. This will generally be a week off for some players to play. So, it is what it is. There's still a lot of talent in there, and there's a great opportunity for maybe a player that's playing well that, you know, they don't have to bat their head against some of the top player in the world and get a chance for an early win in the season.
Yeah, I like it. I always find it a fun watch, to be honest. I think the final stretch is good. I thought last year was a great tournament. All eyes were on it because it was a good field last year because nobody had been playing at all, right? So right, they came back. Obviously, that's one Sungjae won. Last week, we did our draft to see who would win the most money to win the bottle of wine. We're back to picking winners. We each get three players. If one of them wins, we win a bottle of wine. We're at 1-1 right now. I'll let you go first on your pick of your player. So who do you want this week? Three players doesn't matter. If they win, you win.
All right, which is impressive, by the way. I think the fact that, you know, we're exchanging wine. This is pretty impressive considering the number of players in the field. So, you know what? I can't ignore Sungjae. I've got to take him. I know it's tough to come in and defend that title, but, you know, I think he's still he's got game. I think he's got good memories from this event. And that will be helpful in getting around the golf course. And, you know, we love Sungjae.
Yeah, that's true. He's an interview we will never get that I always want. I was lucky to meet him at the Canadian Open, and very few words from Sungjae. I'm going to go with a friend of the show, Cameron Davis. I think this guy's been playing well last week, not his best week. He's due. He's going to pick up a win at some point here.
I would think so.
Buddy Andrew on the bag there. I think he hits it high. He can putt. I think he can grind. If he can keep his head in it, I think maybe this is the week. So I'm going Cameron Davis. Great odds, 46-1 too, by the way.
I like that one. You know what? I'm going to go with the South Florida guy just because, again, familiarity, great player. Recently had a win. Daniel Berger is my second one here. I think he's a beauty. And I think, you know, the fact that he plays in the wind well, and I think that will really be good for him here at the champion course at PGA National.
I'm not picking this guy, but I see Lee Westwood. I'm surprised he's in the field, to be honest with you. 23-1 to win. Brad said it's hard to play 2 weeks in a row, and he was
three
wrong.
Three is even worse.
He was very wrong, but I'm with Brad. If we had him on, he would say three is worse. I'm actually going to go Shane Lowry. I think Shane finished strong last week.
Played well,
This is the type of golf course. It's a hard golf course. Why not, Shane? He's due.
Good win player. Good win player too. I mean, obviously he proved that winning at Royal Portrush. So I love that for sure. Chris Kirk is my other guy. Another guy who played well at Sawgrass, and I think he's trending well. And I don't think anybody would begrudge him if he got a win here.
Nope. Okay. My last one will be Mac Hughes. I think he's coming back for revenge from last year. Sungjae stole it from him. He ripped it out of his hands. So I'm going Mac Hughes to finish it up. Decent odds too. You know, 76-1.
Solid.
Might sprinkle some top 10 there on a couple of these guys. So we got our three players in. You have Sungjae, Daniel Berger, and Chris Kirk. I got Mac Hughes. I've forgotten the names at this point. Shane Lowry and Cameron Davis for my three. Winner, another bottle of wine. Symetra Tour's back, though, Scotty.
Yes.
That's fun. What do you got?
Yeah, the Carlisle Arizona Women's Classic is in play, which should be a fun week. We've got a number of Canadians in the field, seven of them, in fact, including some of our past guests. Jacqueline Lee is in the field. Brittany Marchand is in the field. Rebecca Lee Bentham making a return out there. Samantha Richdale, Monami LeBlanc, AC Tangay, who's coming back after having a baby as well. So nice. That should be good to see. And Maddie's Zurich is the other one. So we got a good sprinkling of Canadians there. The Symetra Tour only played 10 events last year. They've got 19 events on the schedule this year. So it'd be nice for some of those players to get back out there, get going, and get their season started, hopefully successfully.
Yeah, Ryan DeVoe heading back to the Symetra Tour for an event too. You know, he's got a couple off weeks with Mel. She was down traveling
Mexico. Ultimate girls trip.
Which I looked amazing, for the record. Just so jealous. So he's got a few weeks off, so he's going to be heading down to that tournament and playing in a little caddying in a little Symetra Tour.
Yeah, he's got Cindy Ha. He's caddying for her. So he said count it. She's going to be somebody who's definitely going to get a win sometime this year.
Well, I better say some good things. Korn Ferry Tour is back as well. Interesting field, to say the least. Any names popping out to you on this field? Nice to see our boy back and playing out there and Taylor, but any other names popping out?
Well, it was kind of funny because I was like digging through the list, and players like Aaron Baddeley and Robert Allenby,
Luke Guthrie.
Yeah, exactly. So you're starting to dig through there and you're seeing players that, Mark Hensby, there's guys there that are obviously getting ready for PGA Tour champions. Allenby would have be one of those as well. But I mean, Aaron Baddeley, you think of how, consistent that guy was and playing on the PGA Tour, and he's back down playing the Korn Ferry Tour. So you dig through that list. Yeah,
I see your eyeballs right now. Here. Holy.
Yeah, there are some players.
My guy, list. Jonas Blix, is in the field.
Exactly.
This week.
Yeah, exactly.
What's going on? I need to get to the bottom of what's up with him. He got engaged to a Canadian, so that's exciting, but he has not played. I think he's played under 10 tournaments since the 2019 Canadian Open.
Yeah.
So I think he was hurt at some.
I think he had an injury. Yeah.
Like, what's going on? This is quite the field. I this is the tournament I want to watch this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Yeah. And I think if people do dig through that list, they are going to be shocked of who's in the field. But yeah, nice to have the Korn Ferry Tour back for sure.
Ollie Schneider Jans as well. Why not?
Yeah.
All right, Scotty, why don't we hit up our mailbag? There's a bunch of other stuff going on as well in the world that we can get to, Tiger's in the new PGA Tour 2K game and what's happening there. I'm hearing, that he's a big part going forward. So this probably just the start, a bunch of other stuff. We'll get to the LPGA next week as they're going to be returning. So we'll talk about them, but I think it's been a long episode. You can't make everyone happy. I saw a great tweet today. It was like, hey, this is how you know you're living in 2020. I think it was No Laying Up. They had like a 2.5 hour podcast. One guy said, love the 2.5 hour podcast. Another guy's like, how do you expect me to keep my attention for 2.5 hours? Can't win. So I think we've been going for a while. So let's hit the mailbag, Scotty.
All right, let's get to it. Let's get started with what amount of your own money would you be willing to gamble on hitting the green with one attempt at the TPC Sawgrass Stadium 17th hole? This one came via a friend, Brad Clifton, who's actually the editor for Golf Digest Australia. So this is a poll that they put out, and I thought it was a great question. So I thought I'd throw that one up for you.
Yeah, that's a tough one. You've played it, so how it is, and every time you played it, I believe you put one in the water, you said, right?
I did, but I made four.
Yes, right. I feel like, what's it to the front? I know they was playing 144.
It's about 117 to the front. The front flag was playing like 121 on Saturday. It's about 148 through the back.
So, 125. I probably am hitting the green 75% of the time, I would assume. You don't think so? At 125, not the island green.
Check your stats.
You don't think so?
No.
All right. Well, that's not good. You don't think so. All right. You know what? I'm believing in myself. I'm throwing $1,000 down. $1,000.
Yeah, you know what? I think that's about the number I'd be comfortable with as well. I think if you started creeping over that, considering it's going to cost you close to $1,000 Canadian to play it as it is. So why not? I think that would be an interesting question to hear a lot of listeners. So if they can give us some feedback on that, hit us up on Twitter or Instagram and let us know how much they would be comfortable with. That would be interesting to hear. All right. Were you surprised that the PGA Tour had a number of social posts showing Bryson's struggles on the number four at the Players? I think
I'm shocked, but I think they recognize where it's happening. It's that people are going to find it anyway. It's going to be on social. You should own it yourself. And I thought that was great. I was shocked. I think they need to do it more. Usually, if they didn't have every shot being filmed anyway, what would have happened was they would have just cut to him dropping and be like, oh, well, who knows what happened here? This is weird. And act like they had no clue, even though they obviously know how he got there. So I was surprised. I think it's good for the game.
I'm right there with you. There's not much more I can say. That's exactly it. Surprised to see it. Glad that they owned it. Glad that they used it in their main social. They didn't push it over Scratch, which is the PGA Tour's other channel for, you know, kind of the fun stuff or whatever. Most people don't know that, but they owned it right on their PGA Tour handle, and it was good for golf, I think. All right, next one. This was a question I asked. I put out in a poll this week, and I had a lot of feedback from it, and I had a lot of likes, even from LPGA Tour players.
Well, considering flex.
Yeah, considering some major winners as well. Would you like to see an LPGA Tour event at TPC Sawgrass Stadium course?
Yeah, why wouldn't you? That's
I know exactly.
Next.
That one's not hard at all. Although I think it was interesting. Someone proposed a dual tournament with 50 LPGA Tour players and 50 PGA Tour players at the same time. That could get really interesting.
That will never happen. They're not going to take the way the players. I did see pretty cool that they've announced a Champions Tour Ryder Cup style event coming, which I think is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
That is going to be
awesome. Intersectionals for seniors.
Yeah, it's going to be great. And here's the thing why it's going to be great. That's the event you need to get to. And that's when the event you need to get to those bars that those guys are at. Because those are the guys that at this point, they do not care. They're going to have so much money. They've made their money. This is pure fun. It's going to be a great event. I can't wait to see whenever that happens. Hopefully it's quicker rather than later. That way we don't lose out on guys like Freddie Couples and Phil and all those guys. It's going to be amazing. But I would love to see an LPGA Tour event there. Hopefully it happens. I just don't. Yeah. I don't see it happening soon, but I hope it does.
Yeah, I think with the new cooperative efforts between the PGA Tour and the LPGA Tour, I think there's a lot of exploration that's happening with things that are iconic in the men's side of the sport that, you know, could bleed over onto the women's side of the sport, which would be great to see. I think the entertainment value would be fantastic, and I know the players would love to have an event there. All right, this one's interesting. WTF is up with Rory. That got asked with us. Plain and simple, what do we think up with Rory? I think he explained a lot of that himself.
Yeah, he did. I think it was a bad draw a little bit for him too. I know they say the morning late draw is the better draw, and that is the draw he did have, but he just couldn't fight through it. I don't know. Wasn't the week for him. I think he'll get it sorted out. He's got a couple weeks off here. He'll be fine. He's been playing fine. You know, he's been mixing and switching putters here and there, too. I think it's in his head at this point. He's fine. He's Rory McIlroy. He also has a newborn at home. Let's recognize that. We talked about that. Will have an effect. Whether we like it or not, it will have an effect on him. He's human. He'll be fine. So if you want to know what the is up with Rory, why don't you ask Rory what the is up with him? I don't know.
Yeah, I think every player struggles with a little something every now and then. And, you know, TPC Stadium course is not a place that is very forgiving. So if you get something going sideways a little bit, it's just going to chew you up. But he's just so talented. I should jump in here while we're working through our mailbag here. Tiger has posted that he is at home and recovering now. He's thanked everyone.
There you go. Nice.
All right. Little breaking news for us. All right. On to our fifth question. We've got two left here. Decade Golf. I don't know how familiar you are with this. The system that Scott Fawcett professes and uses with a number of players. Somebody wants to know if we have any thoughts on it.
I think it's a smart system. I haven't actually looked at the actual system, the app and everything. I think it's naturally happening on the pro levels, and I think he's teaching it in great ways, and a lot of players could learn from that system 100%. I think he needs to learn a better way of selling his system and selling his app, and recognizing, you know, it is a opinion. Yes, there might be stats about it, but there's a lot of opinion based on it. And yeah, I'm sure there's another person doing something similar, just calling it differently. Hey, he's trying to make some money. I think he's onto something. I just think he could handle himself in a little bit different ways. But hey, it is in writing. Can't really take tone from a tweet. So maybe his tone is actually different, but yeah, I've checked it out. I think it's smart. It's always a good thing to think about, is, you know, missing it on the right side of the hole where you got more room, and knowing where your misses are and all those type of things. So yeah, I think it's a great idea. I just wish he conducted himself a little bit differently, I guess.
Yeah, let's say his social media demeanor hasn't been great over the years. He's apologized for it a few times, but yeah, he can be a little bit abrasive that way. That said, I think the system is really strong in how it works, and understanding your tendencies as well, and realizing that, you know, in golf, we are not playing with a rifle. We are playing with a shotgun. You have to understand where you need to point that shotgun as far as your range of your shots and where they need to be on the golf course to help you gain parts of strokes as you play around the golf course. So definitely a positive system. Is it for everyone? I don't necessarily think so. But are there parts of things that any player can learn from it? For sure. So, you know, if you choose to invest in it, obviously you're a player that's probably invested in the game as it is, as far as improvement and trying to score. I certainly wouldn't wave anybody off from, you know, giving it a try.
No, of course not. I'm aware of it, and I think I need to think about it more. And I know caddies think about it a lot.
Yeah,
whether it's actual that system or just the idea and the concepts behind it. So yeah, why not?
All right, last one. We seem to be getting a run on food questions, which, hey, we like. What food is not served now at most golf courses at their halfway huts or kitchens that should be?
I've already touched on it. It's a slice of pizza. It can't be beat. You fold it in half. You walk down. It's not messy, right? Yeah. Like a burger, you need two hands, and a hot dog, you gotta rip up the ketchup and the mustard, and you gotta put it on. A slice is ready. You just buy one of those. The problem is you can make a bad slice pretty easily. But like, you get one of those pizza heater things that spins the pizza, and it's, I don't know, what do you call it? It's under a heat lamp, basically. You have that turn. It doesn't need to be heat up in the oven. Heated, I don't know, whatever. It's late in the, I'm done. Give me a slice, just a nice pepperoni slice. As I said, fold in half, maybe throw a little hot sauce on that. You're walking down the fairway. Easy, so easy.
Yeah, you know what? I like the convenience of certain foods. I think pizza's great. Fortunate that that takes place at one golf course that I'm at a fair bit, and they're going to expand on that this year. I think a really good food for a halfway house would be an egg roll. I really think a good egg roll at the halfway house. And here's the thing. It doesn't have to be a traditional egg roll. I've had other mac and cheese egg rolls, all sorts of things. It's a great packaging of a product with a meal inside, nice and hot. You know, I've seen meat pies at different places, all sorts of different things, but I think an egg roll would be a cool thing at some golf courses.
Yeah, that's a cool idea. I'm just trying to think. I think you need a food that you can eat with one hand, right? And you don't have to be dipping it and things like that. Like, a poutine is not something you want to.
It's pretty messy, yeah.
And it's heavy, right? So it's a good question. I'm trying to think of, you know, a bagel would be fine. I don't know, in the morning, a bagel with cream cheese. You can go with that at the turn. You know, I've always liked to. There's a course near our town that has basically their version of Egg McMuffins, and they're just top notch. You call in that on the seventh green, and all you can think about is getting that once you make the turn at nine. And I don't know. For me though, if it's one item, I gotta go pizza.
All right. It's a cool question, though. I think it's worth exploring. I'd be really interested if people have visited golf courses that have unique items that they think are really cool, of how they're packaged and what they do. I'd love to hear more about them. And I definitely probably want to investigate some of these a little bit more.
I want to know if you're vegan, though. Like, if you're vegan, what do you grab?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I mean, I don't know.
Banana?
That's a great question.
raisins. Yeah.
Like, maybe they're bringing their own stuff.
Raisins, yeah, like raisins, Mitch,
like,
there.
Like Mitch. Yeah, Taylor Bender's Scatty. Yeah, anyways, those are great. Thanks, everyone, for sending in those questions. Keep them coming. Food questions are certainly making us think these days, so keep those coming as well. We'll put the mailbag up every week. We'll open it up, and you can send in your questions. So keep them coming, and we'll keep answering them.
Cool. Well, what comes every week is the tip of the week to wrap things up, Scotty. So why don't you hit that, and then we'll check out this episode, and we'll go to the bear trap.
All right, sounds good. I want to talk a little bit today about the trail elbow. So obviously, if you're a right-handed player, that would be your right elbow. One thing that I see a lot in golfers all the time is a lot of excessive bend in the trail elbow. And what ends up happening here is we end up bending that elbow more than 90 degrees. And a lot of people do it because they don't feel they have a lot of flexibility. It's a sneaky way just to bring the club to the top. But unfortunately, when they do it, they tend to fail to rotate their upper body. They tend to lift their arms up, fold that elbow, and get the club to the top, or so they think. But as a result of it, they do two things. One, they lose speed a fair bit because they don't have that upper body rotation, and they don't get the hands and arms away from the body as far as having a long swing. And the other side of it as well is that they end up sacrificing control in the club face. So I think a lot of people, if you're going to avoid slower swings and having less face control, really look at that arm structure. Making sure that you don't have that elbow bending more than 90 degrees. Work with a coach with that, and what you'll find is, that'll help tighten up your game a little bit, and also help you gain a little bit more speed.
I like it. I need more speed, so let's get working. Maybe it's the elbow. Who knows? I don't know. It's a lot of things. We know that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for this episode. Thank you to our interview, Ryan Hart, as per usual. Always great. Looking forward to catching up with you this summer. Thank you to our producer and our editor, Brendan Kennedy, killing it. You can find him, Brendan_Kennedy, anywhere. He's out there. He might be back working soon. Who knows? The vaccine's rolling out. This guy might be at a concert near you. Shout out, as I mentioned, to the Honest Heart Collective for their music for this episode. From
Thunder Bay, Ontario.
From Thunder Bay. I knew I was close, right?
You were.
Yeah, Sudbury. They're proud to be from Thunder Bay. They will not be happy I said they're from Sudbury. So from Thunder Bay, Ontario. Good rock band, good dudes. Thank you to flagstick.com as per usual for being the host for this podcast. That's it for us, Scott. I know you're so excited for the bear trap. You're going to be watching the bear trap. You probably got a feed starting Thursday that just shows the bear trap. You can't wait.
Yeah, it's just hearing it over and over again. And I thought it was kind of funny. I opened up the PGA Tour Media Center, and there's actually bear trap statistics and facts that are in there. And I cringed as soon as I read that. But whatever. It is what it is. I'm sure we'll enjoy the week, and we'll both get to enjoy it with a bottle of wine.
All right. Yeah, that is true. I got a game for us coming next week. So next week, what we're going to do, we're going to pick iconic courses. We're each going to give us courses. This is going to require some prep, and we're going to give three whole stretches at those iconic courses, and we have to come up with names for that stretch. So, we got the snake trap, we got the bear trap, we got a, Amen corner, right? But we're going to come up with like maybe 16, 17, 18 at St. Andrews is the window factory or something, because there's hotels and everything. See, I'm very bad at this, but we're going to come out with it next week. Silly game, but hey, why not? I think it can show how silly this is. I can't wait to throw you like 5, 6, 7 in Puerto Rico.
Oh, that could be fun.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, we'll leave it at that. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next week.